From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on July 10th at a park in Chicago. A woman was using a public pavilion for a birthday party, celebrating turning 24. She was wearing a shirt with a Puerto Rican flag. A 62-year-old man named Timothy Tribus began yelling at her, saying that no one should wear that kind of shirt in the United States. Tribus harassed the woman for more than half an hour, and the park officer stood nearby and allowed it. Tribus was later charged with assault and disorderly conduct, and in the video, it was clear to at least a lot of people that he didn't seem to know that Puerto Ricans are Americans. Or did he? Well, it would line up with a poll from last fall showing that only 54% of Americans know that people born in Puerto Rico are U.S. citizens. Here in Rochester, the growing Puerto Rican community is getting ready to celebrate their annual festival and their annual parade, and there are many conversations taking place about the future of Puerto Rico, whether it's statehood, independence, whether the island should receive more support from the U.S. federal government. Our guests in studio this hour include Annette Ramos, who is founder and executive director of the Rochester Latino Theater Company. She's with Jiva Theater Center as a community engagement liaison and on the diversity community of the Arts Council. And just back last night, I think, Annette. So welcome back to Rochester.
Thank you.
Where were you?
I was actually in Chicago attending the National Latinx Theater Conference with over 285 cohorts from across the country, and actually even some representation from Latin America. I saw 10 Latinx original new plays, and I also toured the Chicago Puerto Rican neighborhood, over 50 murals, 13 doors painted, beautiful, beautiful, small community that is really celebrated in Chicago for their contributions to that particular city, but also that connection to the Isla Encantada, Puerto Rico.
All right. Very good. Well, it's nice to have you back here.
Thank you.
Also with us is Santos Cruz, who is the technology chair for the Puerto Rican Parade, which, by the way, is Saturday morning, right? 10 a.m.?
Saturday morning.
Listos.
Yeah, estamos listos, preparados, todo el mundo, para Julio 28, July 28th. The ceremony starts at 10 in the morning. I advise you be there by 9:30, if not sooner than that. Parking does seem to be filling out rather quickly. We're expecting multiple floats from different and multiple organizations who are going to be taking part in this parade, and I'm looking forward to it, to be able to share our culture with the city of Rochester.
Well, it's nice to have you back here. Thank you for being here. Awesome. And also welcome to Paul Figueroa Lippert, who is a liaison with the PIP, the PIP, the Partido Independentista Puerto Riqueño. Paul, welcome, and why don't you tell us a little bit about your own background, because you're sort of, I think you grew up here, but yes. Is home for you permanently now in Puerto Rico?
So my family, we're originally from Rio Piedra, Puerto Rico. I grew up in Rochester. As a teenager, decided to move back, then came back to Rochester, and then moved back to Puerto Rico last year to be more active within the Partido Independentista, the PIP, where I serve as their liaison with Upstate New York. I do a lot of their English translation, and I'm also on their youth committee as a grad student at the University of Puerto Rico.
As we get into the conversation this hour, we'll go in a lot of different directions, but if you are not familiar with the PIP, about Puerto Rican independence, a lot of the conversation is about statehood, but Paul is going to be making the case that this has been really between the federal government, the United States, and Puerto Rico, an abusive relationship, and one that should probably end. And we'll talk about what that might look like and what that would mean. But let me start with this. Santos, you said before the hour began, when it comes to Americans' knowledge of Puerto Rico, are you surprised? Do you doubt any of those numbers? If we look at 54%, according to the New York Times reporting on the most recent poll and surveys, 54% of Americans understand that people born in Puerto Rico are U.S. citizens. And the younger we go, so the finding varied significantly by age and education. Only 37% of people age 18 to 29 know that people born in Puerto Rico are citizens, compared with 64% if you are over the age of 65. Any surprise there?
No, and yes. I was going to make a joke. If you know Despacito, you know Puerto Rico. You know what I mean? The number one play song in the world, breaking records day after day. But the point that I'm trying to make is that a lot of individuals do know and are aware of what Puerto Rico is and what a Puerto Riqueño is. We have been around ever since like the 1900s. We fought in every major war since World War I. We have been bloodied and sweating for this country. You know, and wherever you see a Puerto Riqueño, you're going to hear huepa. You're going to hear, we're loud individuals. We're loud for a reason. We're proud of of our culture. And a lot of, especially if you live in a blue area, get into politics, then you know what a Puerto Ricano is. The numbers, especially here in Rochester, I could say in Monroe County, we're around 60, 70,000 individuals, if not higher, here by Ana Ramos. So I do think that a lot of individuals do know, and I do respect those polls. But I think people just don't want to know. People don't care to know. People know Puerto Rico. Oh, yeah, Puerto Rico, Puerto Ricanos. Yeah, there's that one annoying family. Mm-hmm. I don't like the music, culture, whatever it may be. And here in the melting pot that is America, sometimes people are not going to get along, and that's acceptable. But people, after Despacito, and somewhere between Despacito and Hurricane Maria, people started doing their homework.
So you think at least the knowledge is gaining there?
It's gaining there because we've been that loud. I mean, we've been out here advocating for who we are, what we are, and what we're trying to do. And it just comes down to the respect, or rather the lack of respect, that comes with the notion that America has had generation after generation where they don't respect the incoming culture. Happens with the Italians, it's happened with the Irish, it's happened with the Germans, and every culture that comes in and steps ground in the United States of America, you kind of have to prove, you have to assimilate and kind of prove what you are and what you are about. You know what I mean? Where we as Puerto Ricanos, we're not about that.
Puerto Rico has a very unique identity in American culture. We are the only Latinx cultural group that is actually born U.S. citizens, although we don't have any power or representation if we're born on our Isla Encantada, our motherland. But if we're born on the island of Manhattan, I get to vote and I get to engage in civic responsibility. And I do believe that it is my responsibility to vote and to advocate and to be a voice. So if we are to become a country of kindness, and I'm going to talk a lot about kindness, we must also look at our educational system. We don't learn about Puerto Rico in our educational system. And I'll share an incident. My daughter went to a private all-girls school, and they were talking about immigration, and someone raised their hand and said, well, aren't all Puerto Ricans illegal immigrants? It shows their absolute stupidity, yep, and their
not
inability
stupidity,
to speak.
Lack of knowledge.
Lack of knowledge.
I came from
Thank
Puerto Rico
you.
At the age of 8, and when I learned about history, I'm like, yay, history. Puerto Rico, Commonwealth of United States, got taken over during the Spanish and English American War, and now we're a colony. 10 years later, switch colony for Commonwealth because it sounds prettier.
Just keep your mouth on that microphone.
And
he was doing a big demo all the way around.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
But the idea being that they don't teach it. The only thing that you do learn is that one line stating that Puerto Rico became part of a colony of the United States after the Spanish and English War. Pitch flips. People say, well, we don't learn about Italian culture. We don't learn about Irish culture. Well, Italy is its own separate country. Are we not there hereby part or somewhat part of the United States, in which case we need to start catering to individuals to know more about your neighbor.
Okay, so not a whole lot there in education. Paul, go ahead.
So let's talk about that. How is it that after the United States takes over in 1898, let's talk about the United States takeover real quick. Spain had granted sovereignty to Puerto Rico when the United States came in. Spain signs over Puerto Rico in the Treaty of Paris.
Yes.
How can you sign over a country that has been granted sovereignty? First of all, the U.S. invasion is illegal. Second of all, why is it so that people since 1898 still have not figured out that we have U.S. citizenship? In 1901, in the Insular Cases, the Supreme Court rules that Puerto Rico and the other territories of the United States are not the United States, nor are they part of the United States. They pertain to the United States. That is still the law of the land. We are not the United States. We pertain to the United States, and that allows this kind of racist dialogue where people can come in and they can say these kinds of things about Puerto Ricans. The law is inherently racist. The United States policy towards Puerto Rico and its territories are inherently racist, and that's what has allowed these kinds of conversations to continue for over 100 years.
We basically exist to serve the United States. That's what we are. We exist to serve the market of the United States. We serve to, even since the beginning of the creation of all of this, since when it started, we serve to create the market, the need for the beautiful beaches. I started with the sugar canes, and the United States have done an amazing job since the beginning. of saying, you know what, we're not going to allow you to do in business with anybody else but us, therefore succeeding and making us completely independent of the United States, and everything that we can or cannot do has to be run by the United States, so we don't have any power or say-so for what we do.
Now, the reason I started on this question of what Americans, generally speaking, do or do not know just about status of Puerto Ricans is because we're at this pretty volatile time, I think. There are some ideas that are much more public, and I want to listen to some of the video that did go viral earlier this month from Chicago, some of the more than 30 minutes, this is just a small clip of it, of this 62-year-old man, Timothy Tribus, yelling at this 24-year-old woman who was wearing a shirt, a Puerto Rican flag. And this is part of that clip. CNN had it, and let's go ahead and listen.
You're not going to change us. You know that?
I'm not trying to change anyone. No. I'm just trying to come here no. for a birthday party.
You're not going to change the United States of America.
Okay.
Period.
Okay.
You should not be wearing that in the United States of America.
Okay.
Are you a citizen?
Yes, I am a
citizen. Are you a United States citizen?
Can you please get away from me?
Then you should not be
Can
wearing
Can you
that.
Please get away
you
from me?
You should be wearing... United States
officer,
of America,
officer, I feel
Not
highly
Rico.
Uncomfortable. Can
Are you,
you please
citizen?
Grab him?
Are you an American citizen?
Please, officer.
I'm an American citizen. I would like to know, is she an American citizen? Why is she wearing that?
So when he's asking, are you a citizen? Santos, you told me before the hour began that you think that the first part of that clip where he says, you're not going to change us, gives away the fact that he does know, but he doesn't seem to know to me. He seems very ignorant
it
to me.
It was a rhetorical question. He asks, are you a citizen?
It's a rhetorical question.
I take it. In my opinion, everybody can take things the way where. And I do say that, one, I would like to state the fact that I've dealt with individuals like this before, that I've seen individuals tell me, or don't we own you? Or are you a citizen? Do you have a peso? You know what I mean? The Euro-American culture, not everybody, but a vast majority of the Euro-American culture, like any other culture, is afraid of change, afraid of being changed. And he specifies that within his argument. You're not going to change us. We Puerto Ricanos do wear our flag. Who else does that at the level that we do? You go to the Puerto Rican parade in New York and you see millions of thousands of flags. You know what I mean? We represent our culture. Euro-American culture is afraid of the takeover, that we're trying to change their culture. I'm not trying to change the American culture. We are the American culture, and that we are different. But I do believe in the respect for one another. I do believe that we could coexist, even though we have different cultures.
Do you think, Annette, that that was a man who understood anything about...
Absolutely not. And it's you know, the ignorance, and really you don't know what you don't know, but this perpetuation of us and them. First of all, I don't know about you, but St. Patrick's Day, I'm Irish. I wear my green. True. I celebrate St. Patrick's Day. I go out and engage in my community, because to have an authentic connection means that I'm willing to be open to learning and exploring. And I think that's really lacking in our community. There's a lot of fear, even around the Puerto Rican festival. It is 49 years old this year. It is the longest running cultural festival in Rochester's history. Yet, the sound bites on Sunday night have nothing to do with it. I want to challenge Rochester. I want every person who has never been to bring their children to come and play dominoes with us, to listen to music, to we have a children's activity event. We have phenomenal cultural booths. We have boxing on Sunday. There is so much art. We all go to the Park Avenue Fest. We all go to the Webster Carnival. Please, if you really want to learn about Puerto Ricans and our culture, come and be among us. That is what I'm calling out to Rochester. Don't point, don't be afraid. Overcome your fear of not knowing, because it's the not knowing that keeps us separate. Come and enjoy. I will personally greet you after the after the parade on Saturday.
That's probably going to hug you. It's going to happen. Go ahead, Paul.
Can I add to that? So Annette brought up the coverage of the Puerto Rican Festival and how the media portrays the Puerto Rican Festival in Rochester. So last year I challenged myself to do, and I'm not a mathematician, but I did the math around the arrests of the Puerto Rican Festival. you have a 0.03% chance of being involved in an incident at the Puerto Rican Festival. You have a higher chance of having something happen to you at the Lilac Festival, if you look at the amount of incidents at the Lilac Festival, as compared with the Puerto Rican Festival. So this idea that Puerto Ricans are violent, that this idea that around the festival there's crime, it is a complete myth, and it is a misunderstanding of Puerto Rican people, but that is how the media portrays us.
But that's our own inability, that's our own, and I say this to a certain extent, it's our own fault, because, and that's exactly why I took on the journey of becoming the market, or the tonality chair of the Puerto Rican Parade. 2 years ago, I embarked on this mission, because I saw the same issue that everybody else sees, and I say, we need to figure out how to market each other better, because nobody else is going to write our history for us, nobody else is going to market us for us, nobody else can do a video and show you my culture the way I could show you my culture, because it's my culture to show. And I can't leave this up to other individuals to come. I can't blame them if they, this is what they perceive. This is what they see. This is what they want to see.
I mean, you can blame them. I think you can blame them. I mean, Santos, I am understanding what you're saying. You want to grab the control of this, saying, if this is the narrative they are going to create, then I want to show what
my
we
narrative
perceive
exactly,
which our
is,
culture
if,
is.
If you follow us.
I take that point.
Yes. If you follow the Rochester Puerto Rican Parade .com, go to website, or if you go to Rochester Puerto Rican Parade on Facebook, you're going to see all the videos I personally have created. There's videos showing culture, what we do, what we're about, our dances, our food. This is me taking the reins, taking the controls, and saying, I'm going to show you something different. I'm going to make you see my culture. Because, yeah, people may be ignorant. People may be not willing to learn or accept a different culture. But at the end of the day, when we as a community step up to the plate and say, we're going to take leadership, we're no longer going to let nobody else write my story. We're going to write our story for ourselves. I believe that we can ourselves start changing narrative or what people believe. And I've made videos that have 25 to 30,000 views here in Rochester locally about the parade here in Rochester. And then I did one on Buffalo and then one on Syracuse. And individuals that I said, wow, I didn't know that was the parade. I thought the parade was Sunday night. You know, and that's something that we've talked about for like the last 15, 16 years. Every conversation is about making sure that we separate those two events. But at the end of the day, it's like one comes with the other. And although we do need to learn how to separate them, we need to figure out if they want to parade after this, say they want to parade after this event, how do we mitigate that? Don't not turn it. How do we not get police officers to be in rag gear and instead of create a way in which you could be Puerto Ricanos, celebrate Puerto Ricanos, the people that are doing bad, of course, get out of here, but also make sure that we have full control of our culture, full control of our other individuals perceive of us. Because if we had a community don't stand up to say, you know what, this is wrong, we have to go out here, we have to represent, we have to take leadership. The problem is that there is no leadership.
All right, so let's do this here. Before I grab some phone calls, and we're going to talk in a moment about whether our guests agree or disagree or are willing to share what they think about the future of Puerto Rico and what you should know about possibilities, I want to at least make sure that you're aware that the festival and the parade, separate events, parade, as we said, Saturday morning. The festival starts Friday night.
Friday night, Frontier Field. All are welcome. Saturday, I think it starts at 11 a.m. It's free and open to the public.
The festival starts at 11.
Yes, the festival
after the
starts
parade.
Friday
yeah.
night. But the festival, the parade leads into the festival grounds. Mm-hmm. So if you're marching with us or you're a spectator, come. There's entertainment. There's children's activities. Phenomenal food from many different locally owned businesses. There's also cultural activities. The domino competition. It's pretty competitive, by the way. And there's so much there that happens that's a central hub of celebration. You know, Santos talked about how proud we are of Puerto Ricans. If we were in Puerto Rico and we were at the end of a festival, we'd all be singing and dancing and parading home to our homes. It's actually a cultural thing. So how do we tweak that and make it not look aggressive and violent? How do we also educate law enforcement that, yes, we want your representation, but not ready in riot gear to beat us down or to perpetuate that anxiety of fear? And the last piece is, you don't know what you don't know until you expose yourself to it. You've got to go. You've got to be courageous in our city. There's so much fear. Let's practice kindness. Let's open our doors. Let's look at each other authentically and say, I want to learn about you, and vice versa.
Let me get Don in East Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Don.
Thank you for taking my call. I want to comment on the incident in Chicago. When I first heard it, I didn't know it had gone on for a half an hour that this woman was being harassed. What's even more horrendous than the ignorance of the individual that was harassing her was the inability or the unwillingness of the Chicago police officer to intervene and protect her. These police in Chicago take an oath to serve and protect. Well, he was not serving and he was not protecting. This woman needed his assistance and he ignored her. Thank you.
Don, thank you. The officer, I think, is no longer with that department, the park officer. And I think there was an acknowledgement from a lot of local leadership there that his response was entirely inadequate and absurd, and I think it was addressed.
But I also would like to say that there is change in the United States, and that's why I love the United States and I love America, because there has been change about, what I would say, 80 years ago. If you flew the Puerto flag, you were arrested and labeled a rebel and put in jail. You couldn't. The Puerto flag became legal to fly in like somewhere in
1957.
Boom. My man got the math. So before then, it was illegal for you to fly and even talk. I mean, that's when the United States came over to Puerto Rico. But that's a whole different topic. The point being that we're getting to a point where it was legal to do it. It's legal for me to be patriotic with my culture. It's legal for me to even do something like this. And now, yeah, the officer didn't respond in the adequate amount of time, and I wish he would have done so. But the individual no longer works for the department, and everybody's giving him negative whiplash for his inability and the department's inability to train their officers to be able to recognize that cultural change. So I do recognize the change that America has displayed throughout the years, and for that, I love my country.
All right, Paul.
To be honest with you, I don't find it that surprising. In Puerto Rico, we've had issues with our own police department, of our own police department repressing our own people. For example, on May 1st, El Día del Trabajador, so May Day in the United States, it was we had people protesting budget cuts to the University of Puerto Rico, pension cuts for the teachers, school closings. It was a protest mainly of university students and teachers, as well as students. There were several young students there, elementary school students, that were tear gassed by police and shot at by police, and riots broke out because it was the police sent in to break up these people, showing, and you see it, you saw the Puerto Rican flags, you saw people that were proud of Puerto Rico and they want Puerto Rico to become better, and our own police, under the colonial government regime, are allowed to do that. In the United States, it's the same thing. The police are still allowed to get away with that, and while the police department, that specific local police department, did their due diligence and they got rid of that officer. How many other incidents, not just of Latinos, are there where there are no repercussions for the police officers? So while that is one incident where they did the right thing, that there's larger conversations we need to have both on the island and in the mainland.
Let me get James in Irondequoit, who's got a comment about, a number of the issues that we've been discussing. Go ahead, James.
Hi. I actually wanted to take a moment to blame the arts for once. I first saw West Side Story when I was probably 11 or 12 years old, and I just watched it again on TMC or TCM a couple of days ago. And Maria at one point complains that since coming to this country, her brother Nardo has kept her out of circulation. And then a few minutes later, the ladies sing a song about how in America they will always be foreigners. And so most of my life since watching West Side Story have thought the Puerto Ricans were foreigners because Maria says since coming to this country. So, I mean, that's a minor thing, but just thought it was an interesting side note.
What do you make also about Maria and the question on, maybe that feeling like it's a different country, or a word that a lot of people bring up, which is assimilation, whether it should or should not happen, or what that even means, James?
Yeah, I think we should, Puerto Ricans should be more assimilated, or we should at least understand Puerto Ricans better since they are Americans, but I don't... Assimilation always seems to be a doubtful thing. Because on the one hand, there are a lot of Puerto Ricans who want to hang on to their identity as Puerto Ricans. But on the other hand, they are Americans. So, you know, there's kind of a wall there, as it were, that...
Yeah.
So they're...
You know, I think we want to look over the wall, but it's still there.
James, thank you. I mean, so I think it's interesting. You could see James kind of working through that, and one of the important points there is Puerto Ricans are Americans, so their culture is part of American culture.
I want to address the arts, obviously.
I know everybody wants to jump in. We'll hit all of this, yeah. So, but do you blame West Side Story? Does he have a complaint there?
He actually speaks such truth. If America is learning what Puerto Rican identity is through West Side Story, that is not education. That is not awareness. First of all, let's look at West Side Story. It was written by a white man, by white men, about their perception of two cultural groups. We forget that West Side Story is not about just Puerto Ricanos. It's also about Italians. It's about a corner of a block of a neighborhood and those new migrants coming in. Because Puerto Ricans aren't immigrants. We're migrating from one land to another. It is a unique identity. That song, I Like to Live in America, is all about assimilation. I will never assimilate. That means washing clean and washing away. I believe...
So you say assimilation is washing clean your identity?
Absolutely, because you're watering it down. I want to retain my authentic roots. My people struggled. My people overcame oppression. My people overcame such diversity. It is in my DNA. I may look like a white person and pass, as I've often been told. I will never want to pass for anything other than Latinx, American, Puerto Rican, all of that. That is who I am. So the idea of the arts, and I love the fact that he brought up the arts, because that's exactly what I'm doing here in Rochester, advocating for inclusion and diversity. A classic example, we brought in five Latino organizations to Jiva Theater Center. Fantastic. They want inclusion. Guess what? Mark Cuddy, the artistic director of Jiva, came with me to Chicago and spent 5 days immersed in Latinx theater. That's real inclusion. You must go and you must engage in an open exchange and be in those uncomfortable places.
All right, Paul.
So his name was James, correct?
James.
Okay, so I don't know if James had tuned in the beginning where I had stated that the law of the United States of America is that Puerto Rico is not the United States, nor is it part of the United States. We pertain to the United States. We are not Americans in the full legal sense of the word, in the full definition. So in 1917, we were granted U.S. citizenship. The Puerto Rican House of Delegates voted against U.S. citizenship. American citizenship was imposed on us. President Harry Truman, so Puerto Rico does not have its own constitution until 1952. They start debating that in 1950, and President Harry Truman says that Puerto Rico's constitution, that Puerto Rico's citizenship can be taken away at any time. So yes, in that sense, under the law, while we have American citizenship, we are still foreigners in our own land. And the idea of assimilation, that would assume that white American culture is the dominant culture, and we have to, in America, there exist many subcultures. African Americans have a beautiful, wonderful culture. We have Asian Americans that have a beautiful, wonderful subculture. American culture should be more pluralistic, so I don't agree with this idea of assimilation. And then let's talk about what's going on in Puerto Rico right now. In Puerto Rico, we have crypto, we have Bitcoin coming in and trying to create this thing called Puertopia, where they're coming in and they're buying up all of our land. They've bought large amounts of Loíza. Loíza is one of the poorest communities in Puerto Rico, but it's oceanfront, and they're buying people out. In the town of Rincón, they're buying people out. In the town of Sidra, they're buying people out, and Americans are coming in. Those Americans that are coming in are not assimilating to Puerto Rican culture. So how is it that when Puerto Ricanos come to the United States, we have to assimilate, and we're bad for not assimilating,
because
but when they come
us.
Right, but when they come to my island, our island, they don't have to.
It's not our island, it's their island.
Well, and that's why in the Partido Independentista, we're here to... have that conversation.
Yeah, so and let's get there in just a moment. Let me just kind of put a bow on this little part of the conversation.
I want to add one part.
Absolutely, Santos.
And it will be quick.
Well, then you first, because I have one more question for the panel. No, please.
It was definition.
Yeah.
So, okay, it depends, and I've heard this since as long as I remember. What do you define American to be as? If you define it as a culture, if you define it as white, as you're American, then yeah, apple pie, yeah. I personally don't like apple pie. I hate apple pie. You know what I mean? But that's just me. With that being said, I believe in the pursuit of happiness. I believe in the freedom of speech. I believe living with my neighbor. I believe in that we're all human beings. I believe in everything that the Constitution of the United States have put forth. But like many other cultures and like African Americans, just like Martin Luther King has said, I'm just trying to hold America to its own Constitution. That's it.
Okay, so we just had this very interesting back and forth after the World Cup. France wins the World Cup, and the majority of the French players are of African descent. And Trevor Noah, who of course is of African descent himself, host of The Daily Show, sent out his congratulations to Africa for winning the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And then the French ambassador to the United Nations said that Trevor Noah is speaking the language of white supremacists, and that attacking French players for not actually being French enough. And the French ambassador said, you can't do that. They are French first. And attacking them as not French enough is what white supremacists do. Which, by the way, the interesting thing was Trevor Noah recognized that's true. White supremacists do that. But he said there's nuance and distinction here. He said, I'm not a white supremacist. I'm someone who wants to also not lose heritage and history. So African players on the French national World Cup team or African descended people in France are considered French first. There's an expectation of assimilation, and Trevor Noah is pushing back against this idea that you must assimilate and sort of be French first, and largely in Trevor Noah's concern, kind of expunge your own background and history. And he says you can be both. Of course, it's wonderful that they are French, but they are also of African descent, and we should celebrate all parts of their history. And his concern is that France doesn't do that, that assimilation forces that out. The French ambassador pushed back and said, no, the most important thing is when you have a single state and a society in a larger society, that state must be first, that you've got to be French first.
But you also have to value all the cultures that contribute to that
I think that's
identity.
What that was about. It was a debate about what assimilation means.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Puerto Ricans, again, have a very unique relationship and identity in American culture. We are seeped in that identity. And to whitewash us, which is what I feel mm-hmm. assimilation is, it's mm-hmm. like eating, you know, you go to a restaurant and you order a salad. If your salad is pureed, it's not going to be very flavorful. But if it is truly tossed with all of its ingredients, it's that diversity of flavor. It's that diversity that contributes and that also accentuates and highlights all of that combined effort. Yes, French they are, but they are also seeped in their blackness. You can never erase blackness from a person. They will always be that in our presence. Many of us can pass for other things, but truly, truly, to really embrace that identity of American culture, we must respect all the contributions.
Paul, what do you want to add to this as we look at France and we talk about what assimilation means?
I don't know if you've read anything by the African-American writer Zora Neale Hurston. She's one of my favorite writers, and she was actually kind of discredited in her day because as the civil rights movement progresses, she came out as against desegregation, and people went crazy. And they said, why are you against desegregation? She said, well, if the mainstream American culture does not want us, they don't deserve us. And we are going to be in our communities and we are going to do our own thing and we are not going to be assimilated. We are not going to be whitewashed. I see something similar in Puerto Rico. If you look at the way we have been treated since 1898, if you look at every status referendum that we've had since 1967, the United States has consistently discredited the Puerto Rican people, discredited the will of our people. Growing up in the Rochester area, and I am a When I speak Spanish, I speak it with a little bit of an American accent. I'm a very light-skinned Puerto Rican, but I still experience racism. So I experience this racism. I see this history of the way the United States has treated Puerto Rico. I see the way they have treated us in our referendums. And my thought is, well, if the United States doesn't want us, then they don't get to have us. So that is my feeling about that. And then in 1992, when George H.W. Bush was president, the Partido Independentista, we had some really good conversations with the U.S. Congress. And it was leading up to the 1993 status referendum. And the United States Congress actually said, in order for Puerto Ricans to maintain their culture, that would be very difficult under statehood. And even under the current political status that we have, they said it's very difficult for us to not to maintain our Puerto Ricanidad. And even the United States Congress, Republicans and Democrats, both in the United States Congress in the 90s, recognized that. In 1967, we had our first status referendum after the adoption of the Estado Libre Asociado, the freely associated state, the status we have right now. The next election year, Luis Ferré becomes the first pro-statehood governor of Puerto Rico, and he comes up with this idea of Estadidad Criolla, Creole statehood. And he said, well, we'll become a state, but we'll be able to maintain our identity. And the United States has actually consistently rejected that notion of Estadidad Criolla. And in referendums where the statehood party has said, well, we want to do this and that thing to preserve our identity, the United States has rejected that. Right now in Puerto Rico, our legislation that we write is in Spanish, because Spanish is the language that people speak. If we were a state, would our Congress be held in Spanish? Probably not. So there are certain conversations we have to have of how our political status makes it that way. We're colonial subjects. So that's, you know, if we were our own country, if we had our own identity that we could preserve, we could have that salad bowl conversation that you're talking about. But under what we have right now, it's really not possible.
All right, so that's the part of the case for independence from Paul Figueroa Lippert, who is a liaison with the PIP, the Partido Independentista Puerto Riqueño. Also here, Santos Cruz, the technology chair for the Puerto Rican Parade, which is Saturday morning, 10 a.m., Liberty Pole Way. And Santos says, get there early if you want to park and get down there and don't miss any of it. Annette Ramos is here. She is, of course, the founder of the Rochester Latino Theater Company. She's with Jiva Theater Center as a community engagement liaison and on the Diversity Community of the Arts Council. Lots of councils and communities. And that's doing all that stuff. Look, we're going to get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back, and we've got a little more time to talk parade and festival, and I want to get our other guest's response to what Paul is raising with his concerns about statehood. What Paul is bringing to the table today is part of the conversation that I think doesn't happen very often, which is that we usually talk about statehood or no statehood. And Paul is talking about a very different framework and a way of thinking about history and the reality there. But I know listeners would want to know from Paul, is there an economic engine for Puerto Rico to exist independently? Is there concern post-hurricanes with people leaving the island, coming to the mainland here, going elsewhere? So a lot more to talk about, and let's do that right after this break on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, art intersecting with social media and social justice. How does it happen? Well, many of us use social media to vent, to post thoughts. Some emotional days and moments are captured there. What used to be in a bar or at a friend's house or on the phone happens in a tweet. A new project brings it all together, and we'll explain how it works next hour. Welcome back to Connections. Annette Ramos, do you take a position on statehood?
This is a very controversial issue. I'm a tad older than my millennial counterparts here. Growing up in a Puerto Rican family in New York City, if I ever dare mention a sovereign nation, my mother would absolutely panic. You have to remember, she grew up in La Isla. She experienced that white colonialism, the fact that the Puerto Rican flag was illegal, speaking Spanish in schools. Mm-hmm. This is unbelievable. My courageous heart says sovereign nation, independence. But my practical mind says, I'm afraid. How can we afford it? And the fact that we are almost on the verge of becoming a third world country because of the lack of resources is a frightening thing. So I'm going to look at my millennial up-and-coming leaders to take this torch and lead us forward, and I will always have your back.
Okay, Santos. Statehood, independence, or status quo?
I can't say. It's the same question. It just tears you apart. You don't know. You feel like you're picking from being Puerto Rican to being American. And if being American means that I have to assimilate, then I can't do that. I'm sorry, but I just can't. My culture is my culture. I love being American. I love what American stands for. But I love what it stands for. What it stands for, what it's supposed to stand for, not what it is sometimes. And with that being said, I can't say. And I'm going to tell you why I can't say. Both parties are to blame. Puerto Rico has a lot of work to do in being able to stabilize a working government with politicians that care for the interests of the people and the interests of the island itself. Okay, it's one thing to have somebody in the exterior trying to destroy you from the outside, but when you are within the system and you say, you know what, I can't change none of this, and they go out there and get messed around with corruption, you're not helping the narrative that we're trying to fulfill. You're not helping the island itself in trying to forward the agenda of the island economic status. But the United States has done things like the Jones Act, in which they do not allow us to do trade with any other country but the United States. The United States has done it by themselves. They have made sure that Puerto Ricanos and Puerto Rico become dependent of the United States. You keep an individual dependent of you. You control that individual. The reality is that Puerto Rico has the beaches for miles on end that we could be constructing and doing our own and selling them to. But instead, now we have to sell them for the cheapest, the lowest. Who wants it? Who wants this island? Who wants this beach? Who wants it? Oh, the lowest. Okay, things that are worth so much money now are being sold for nothing. Not only that, the beginning of Puerto Ricanos, we had the sugar canes.
Mm-hmm.
Puerto Rico was like what, number one, number two?
So under Spanish rule, Puerto Rico actually had a very diverse agricultural economy.
Yeah.
So Puerto Rico was the smallest of the Spanish colonies. So we could not produce in quantity in terms of the other Spanish colonies of production. We could control the quality. If you look at the official coffee of the King and Queen of Spain, the official coffee of the Vatican, it is Puerto Rican coffee. So under Spain, we grew sugar, we grew coffee, we grew tobacco, we grew all sorts of things. At the time of the U.S. invasion, there were 851 large local plantation owners in Puerto Rico. The United States comes in by the Great Depression. All of the agriculture is controlled by four U.S. corporations, and they eliminate the coffee industry, they eliminate the tobacco industry, and they make it the sugarcane industry. And then in the 1930s, when the United States realizes they can produce sugar cheaper in other areas, they take down the agricultural industry, and then they develop a manufacturing sector that's not sustainable. So we essentially have resources that we can't
control. We have exactly. resources that the United States tries to use and has used for their personal gains and benefit, and has not allowed and says, "Oh, we throwing you so much money in welfare and this that and we don't need welfare. We need high quality paying jobs. I would love to be a firefighter in Puerto Rico and get paid what I get paid here." And I will not blame my nation. I will not blame Puerto Rico for all of that, knowing the history that has led us to this point.
So let's talk about federal benefits then. So federal benefits, and that's a big argument that people have about statehood versus independence. The United States sends us, in quotation marks, $13 billion in federal aid. Los puertorriqueños, we pay 80% of those. We pay into Social Security, we pay into Medicare, we pay into SNAP. In Puerto Rico, it's called PAN. We pay into those things. The United States gives it back to us. 80% of the federal aid we get from the United States is recycled money. So the idea that Puerto Ricans, that we couldn't exist without federal aid is a myth. The United States profits $58 billion off of us each year in the colonial tax system they have set up with the Jones Act, with capital gains tax, with all of those things. If those $58 billion was put back into Puerto Rico, what could we do with that money? And that is just talking about trade with the United States. If we had the ability to trade with other countries in the world. What could we do? What is the name of our island? Puerto Rico. In English, that means rich port. We are an island that has a strategic location. We can grow anything you want on this island. We have so many possibilities. The issue is we've never been able to materialize.
Puerto Rico doesn't even grow their own rice.
And half of it's plastic, but that's another story.
Okay. I love rice. Mm-hmm. Arroz con gandule is one. We don't even grow our own rice.
Mm-hmm. But Paul Lippert, I'll just follow up with you. Mm-hmm. Don Rice-Swisson says, the population of Puerto Rico is dwindling and many residents continue to leave for the mainland U.S. Does that concern any of your guests? Can Puerto Rico continue to maintain its own culture and identity as it shrinks and scatters?
So part of the economic system we have set up right now, especially after the elimination of Tax Code 936, is one that forces out migration. That works for the politicians of Puerto Rico right now because the unemployed people leave the island and the politicians can say, well, look, we decreased unemployment. Our governor went out the other day and said we have lowest unemployment in 50 years. Yeah, it's because everybody's leaving. Okay? I think we can preserve our identity. I think we need to be more conscious about those efforts. And what was the other half of the question besides our identity? Sorry.
Well, he said what he wrote was the population of Puerto Rico is dwindling. Many residents continue to leave for the mainland U.S. Mm-hmm. Does that concern your guests? Can you maintain culture and identity as the population?
So let's talk about why our population is shrinking. First of all, Tax Code 936, which allowed U.S. corporations to come in, was eliminated. Those corporations left. In Puerto Rico, in order to maintain employment, in order to keep people employed, the government starts taking out all of these loans for public works projects. The government then becomes the largest employer in Puerto Rico. This debt was not sustainable. So now our debt, now the United States basically wants their money back. These banks, these corporations want their money back. Okay? In order to do that, the United States government, bipartisan with Paul Ryan, with President Obama, they create a fiscal control board, La Junta de Control Fiscal. Mm-hmm. According to the courts, they have supreme authority over the Puerto Rican government. Our legislature, our governor, cannot make our own financial decisions. Our governor signed into law a budget that he said himself was symbolic. He said himself his government is symbolic. We do not have sovereignty in Puerto Rico to make these decisions. So the Junta de Control Fiscal right now is eliminating almost two-thirds of the budget for the University of Puerto Rico. When I started as an undergraduate student at the University of Puerto Rico, tuition was $56 a credit hour. Now it's $140. This is the United States government doing this. $6 billion in cuts to health care. Closing 300 schools in Puerto Rico that will only save $17 million. What is $17 million to a $70 billion debt? Our sales tax in 2015, in Puerto Rico, it's called IBU. IBU was 6%. Now it's 11.5%.
If you were part of the United States, you'll never see this happen because the interest of the people would take over. With the money, we have to find the money. Was we had to take care of the people. There's already a certain standard of living that we have given these individuals in America, and we had to sustain that. In Puerto Rico, well, you owe this money, so cut the schools, cut the hospitals. All you need, all it sucks to be you.
So, but even under statehood, because Detroit had a Junta de Control, Detroit had a fiscal control board. Under the United States, and this debt plan does nothing to do with the restructuring of the debt. There is no audit of the debt. Our own governor is against the audit of the debt because his dad was governor. If we audited the debt, we would see all the things his dad did in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And under statehood, under the current status, this type of thing will continue to happen. People are leaving because people are being squeezed out of Puerto Rico.
So, Paul, because we're going to lose the hour, will you let our listeners know if they want to learn more about the PEEP, PIP?
Well, before we do that, I just want to say that the conversation about statehood versus independence is because people believe there's a mandate for statehood. In the last referendum, even though 97% of people voted for statehood, it was because the vote was boycotted by all the other political parties. So really, only 23% of the population voted for statehood. The pro-statehood governor, who won the election, only won 40% of the vote. Statehood has never won a majority. There is no mandate for Puerto Rican statehood. So to make that clear, that the majority of Puerto Ricans have historically rejected statehood. If you want to find more out about the PEEP, there is independencia.net, and you can look up the Partido Independentista Puerto Riqueño on Facebook. On Rochester, we have a Facebook page called PEEP Rochester, New York, and then it later says Partido Independentista Puerto Rican, not to be confused with Party in the Park that I believe also uses
PIP. PIP, Party in the Park.
But we are Pete Rochester, New York, and we have a peaceful, emphasis on peaceful, demonstration at 5:30 at the Federal Building because on Wednesday the 25th, because that is the anniversary of the U.S. invasion.
That is 2 days from now, Wednesday, 5:30, a peaceful demonstration.
Peaceful.
Paul, thank you.
On the sidewalk.
Thank you for being here, Paul. I appreciate you being here. Annette Ramos, you're going to be at the Puerto Rican Festival
and
starting
parade.
Friday night. At Frontier Field for the festival.
Absolutely. Saturday morning is the parade, and the whole weekend is just seeped in Latinx culture. Come. It's not just Puerto Ricans. We have all sorts of wonderful, expanded Latin American countries. Also, Latino Theater Company will be producing Anna in the Tropics this fall, so join us at Black Friars Theater. And thank you, Evan, always
you.
For helping us make a conexión.
And Santos, good luck, especially with the parade. 10 a.m. Saturday morning.
9:30, like I say, 9:30.
Get there early. Thank you very much. More connections coming up.